my name is Mike Conrad. I'm running for the 4th District for the House of Representatives. And I am 50 years old. I am married. I've been married for 22 years. I have 2 children. My oldest is 21 next month. And my youngest is 18, just graduated from Central Valley in the COVID year. So that was odd. it didn't feel like a graduation, but it was, I guess. It was really hard for her because she's very social. And so I felt bad for her, you know, because it's like supposed to be the climax of your life, you know, that part of your life. And then it was just nothing, you know, it was just sort of, I felt bad. I feel bad for all of them, you know, it's just unfortunate, but good kids. I am the CEO of a company called The Savory Butcher. We sell meat in bulk to families all over the country. We're in about 9 states, and we're growing. But I decided to run for office about a month ago, late in this race, but maybe it was a little longer ago, but very excited to do it. I think there's lots of opportunity. I think I bring a lot of energy to the table. So different perspective.
And so why are you running?
So I have personal reasons. I have some issues with the some of these state departments that have these people in them that are, you know, they have these God complexes that forget that they work for us and not the people. You know, they work for the people, not themselves. And so I just think there's a lot of rules and regulations for small businesses that are antiquated and need to be changed. And I think there can be a lot of rules and regulations that new laws that can be created to help small business. My love is small business. I want to help any small business. I want to help the 4th District. And I think I can do that because I have a different perspective. I have a business perspective rather than just, however most politicians are. I don't think a lot of them are business-minded, more 9-to-5ers.
So how is your business affected during this coronavirus? Were you still able to keep operating?
Yeah. I was the opposite of everyone else. I actually am an essential business. I sold food, so therefore I could stay on the road. It actually was, I don't want to say this, but it's actually a blessing more than a hindrance for us, because we were able to help a lot of people to get food when they couldn't. You know, when the grocery stores started to not have meat in their departments, we were selling, you know, boneless, skinless chicken breasts and ground beef and steak in 40-pound boxes. So we were buying it straight from the farms, and we deliver it straight to the consumer. So we don't have any warehouses or anything like that. So what was interesting about COVID-19 is that because we were an essential business, you know, the gas is the lowest it's ever been. Diesel dropped to nothing. Hotels were super cheap. All of the things that would happen as perfect storm to benefit us happened. I mean, everybody started thinking in bulk as you saw people run in and try to take all the toilet paper. They're trying to buy all the toilet paper in the world. But they did the same with food. You know, when they started seeing scarcity, they thought, oh, we need to buy in bulk. And that's how I sell it. I've been doing this for a long time. I sell it in bulk. So the minimum you can buy from me is 40 pounds of chicken. Hmm. So it's 40 pounds at a time. So for me, it actually increased our business. We actually grew quite a bit because of it. And then we went and helped we had a large farm called Wayne Farms. They're the 7th largest farm in the chicken purveyor in the country. And they... you know, their issue is they sell to the service industry. And of course, we all know what happened there. Nobody's eating out. So they had all this extra chicken, and they got a hold of us because of our model. We pre-sell everything. So we pre-sell it, and then we have predetermined locations where we distribute it, mostly church parking lots around the country. But they wanted to do these sales where their plants are, and their plants are in Atlanta. They're in Dobson, North Carolina. So several different plants. So we just did a sale in Atlanta, in Oakwood. It's northeast of Atlanta. And we sold 150,000 pounds of chicken. That was the beginning of May. And that was like 2,000 cars that came through. You don't even get out of your car. You just roll up. We check you in. We put the meat in your back of your car and you drive off. Then we did one in Tucker, Georgia, which is another location they're in, and we did twice that. We almost sold a little over 300,000 pounds of chicken, and we delivered that in 2 days. We had over 4,200 cars come through. So it's a cool model. We do this everywhere. When we started here in Spokane Valley.
So have things changed now that Spokane has moved to level two and other parts of the country have started to open up? Has that changed your business any?
Yes, we've seen a slight decline, but the summer months are always slower. So we already knew that, that was coming. However, we now are doing these mega chicken sales, and those haven't changed at all. So that's what we just did in Atlanta. So we're going to take that model and we're going to duplicate that everywhere, not just in Atlanta. We're planning on going to Florida. We're heading to Washington, D.C., New York. We're in Texas already, so we're going to do it in Dallas and Austin and Houston. We'll be doing it everywhere. So that's helped us a lot.
So how would serving in the legislature affect that?
Also, what do you mean?
Well, I mean, you're going to be spending at least 2 months of your year in Olympia, and in the odd years, or I guess the first years of the biennium, 4 or 5 months. How does that affect the? I mean, do you have enough people to handle that part of the business so that you can focus on the legislature?
Yes, 100%. I have an executive assistant, that does a lot of my work for me. Like, I just hand it to her, and she'll stay with me. I'll probably hire a second one to help me just to make sure we stay true to what we're, make sure everything runs good. But yeah, no problem at all. Not a problem at all. You know, the other reason I'm doing this is because I actually worked with Matt Shea and Senator Patton to change a rule with the Department of Health, because the Department of Health was trying to, they were charging me like $600 per county per every time I delivered. I was spending like, $20,000 to $25,000 a year just to have health department permits, and they really didn't do anything. They would come and look at the truck, and they wouldn't temp anything. Idaho was charging me $79 for the exact same thing for the whole state for the whole year, and I'm getting charged $20,000 to $25,000 a year through the state of Washington. And I just like, so I went to Matt and said, Matt, this is not fair. And he says, well, go to the health department. Let's try to get it resolved. I went to the head of the health department, and we actually did a conference call with all the county health departments. And I just said, listen, I'm looking for one fee. That's all I'm trying to do. If you guys want to inspect my trucks, inspect them. But one time, let's get the fee done and let's move on so I can distribute this food. I go, because from a logistical perspective, you want me to drive a truck to your county, have you look at it, just say, yeah, it's all good. Have me write you a check for $600. And that's it. Nothing happens. So you want me to keep doing that? It costs me money to drive a truck there and to have you look at it, and before I even do the sale. And I said, all I want to do is let's all work together. This is a new model. Let's make it so I can, buy one permit and it covers everything. If you guys want to come to the deliveries, I'm totally happy with that. Come. Nope. They couldn't work with me. Not doing it. We're going to keep going the way we want. And didn't help me at all. So Matt helped me put a bill together in the House, and we actually went to committee. I did a little video, sent them I played the video in the committee. It blew through the committee, went to the floor of the House, passed. I think it was like 48 to 50 or something like that, or there was like two dissenters is all. And then it went to the Senate, went through the committee, same thing, blew through it. I think there were 2,000 bills going through, and my bill passed of the 100 that did, and then Inslee signed it. So basically what happened is, then I got in a fight with the health department because they were ticked off because they didn't get their way. And I was like, I did this because of you. Because you guys can't understand that things change and there's innovation, and you don't listen to us, the people. I'm trying to tell you, I want to work with you. I want to make this happen. But what do? You fight me. You're supposed to help and uplift. You're supposed to adjust. You're supposed to, help these companies, small businesses grow, but you're not. You hamper. You think you're in charge. You think you run the country. You don't. You work for us. You're supposed to help us. So going through that experience and getting that change. So I moved from the health department. Now I'm under, we created what they call a direct seller's permit, and it dropped down to, I think, $3,500 a year rather than $20,000 or $25,000. Still high compared to Idaho, but I was happy because now I wasn't under the health department. They couldn't come and shut me down if I was trying to deliver. And I was under the Department of Ag, and they were great. They were like, we'll come inspect your trucks once a month. Just sign for the permit, pay for the permit. We'll come look at it. Exactly what I needed. So my point is this. Going through that experience, I realized the laws that are created and exist now can be changed. They were created by other people who are no smarter than we are. And there's no reason why we can't go in and change it. And I think a lot of business owners just think, well, this is how it is. Well, no, it doesn't have to be this way. And I've gone through this and I've done it. It doesn't have to be this way. It's this way because somebody else created it. But you can change it. We can make it better. We can update it. Or we can create a whole new law. So I'm excited to help the constituents of the 4th District to really, and I'm talking about all of them, but small business primarily, because I want them to understand that you can thrive in the state of Washington. You don't have to drive 10 miles over to Idaho and build your business there because they're more helpful than the state of Washington. Let's just start working on together and change the rules, change the laws. They don't have to stay the same. So as a legislator, that's what I want to do. I also want to find those people that are in the state agencies that are enforcing these laws that aren't helping. They are condemning people and sometimes destroying people, and they don't care. There's no consequences for these people. They can stop, they can cut, they can fine, they can do anything they want, subpoena, and they hide behind the state. And there are a lot of great people, but there are a lot of idiots that work for the state of Washington who think that they are God. And those people are going to have a visit for me if I win. And I want to root those people out. Because if my constituents come to me and they say, hey, I have a problem with the Department of Health, I have a problem with the Department of Labor, I have a problem, you know, I'm the kind of guy that's going to go in and meet with that person that they have a problem with my constituent. I won't email them. Not that I have authority or anything, but hey, I'm a legislator. I will go in and investigate and see what's going on. So I want to be a people guy. I want to be a guy that's there for the constituents, for the small businesses.
So the legislature may end up going back into session this year because of the difficulties with the coronavirus and budget deficit and all that. How would you approach something like that? Where are the areas that you would think about cutting in terms of state spending?
You know, there's so many areas. I think there's a lot of overspending in the social areas. You know, I think with Democrats, there is just a massive amount of spending. They want to save, help, fix everything. And I just don't think it's necessary. Specifically, I don't have anything specific on where I would cut. I'd have to look at that in more detail. But I at this point, I don't have an answer for that because I'm not heavily involved with that. But I would definitely look at all the different social issues that they spend money on. It would be my number one.
So we're also, is there a role for the state of Washington when it comes to reforming police? We're hearing all about the Black Lives Matters protests and all that. Where are the areas that the state is appropriate to deal with that?
From what perspective? What do you mean?
Well, in terms of should the state ban things like chokeholds, that sort of thing, or is that best left at the local level in terms of policing?
Well, I think Trump signed an executive order today about that, some sort of order about how the chokehold is not, unless the police are in danger, that's basically banned. So from President Trump, he's coming down saying this is what it is. It's a reform. I'm not sure. I haven't seen all the details on it. It just happened today. But I think that was part of it as far as the chokehold. I think it should be left under, you know, I think there should be reform. But I think we're overreacting to this. I mean, the idea of defunding police is ridiculous. That is just crazy. I mean, so maybe you should just make a list of everybody who thinks they should defund. And then the cops won't go to their house when they're in trouble. How about we do that? I mean, that's how stupid it is to me and my brain. There has to be some reform. that yes, there shouldn't be excessive force when not necessary, but they also shouldn't be handcuffed, you know, to be able to do their job. So it's a sensitive, you know, area. I definitely think, you know, as far as the Black Lives Matters, you know, 99.9% of Black people are killed by other Black people. It's a fact. And the odds of a cop killing a Black person is very, very small. And just look at the statistics. It's what it is. So, Black lives do matter. But do they matter more because a white guy killed them? Or do they matter more because a cop killed them? Or do they matter more because a Black guy killed? I don't think it matters what color they are or what they do. I mean, they should matter, period.
So let me hit you with a couple of other issues that that were talked about in Olympia this year. What do you believe about the $30 car tabs initiative that that was approved again this year? It's gone to the state Supreme Court. What's your view about that?
As just a regular guy in Washington, I like it. You know, I remember when Tim Iman did that back in, what was it, the 90s when he passed the law. Before, because I owned a Tahoe in the 90s, and I was paying $900 for my tabs in the 90s. And when Tim passed that, I was fired up because it dropped down to whatever it was, $60 or something. That was exciting. As a person that had a car that had to pay that every year, I loved it. Now, I'm obviously coming in as a different perspective, looking at the budgets and what needs to be done. You know, I'd that's something I'd have to look at to see exactly, you know, what it affects, because I hear both sides. You know, I hear Tim's side and I hear the state side, and they're upset, obviously, because he pushed it through, got voters to agree to it. I'd have to look at it in detail, but I think if the voters want it, it needs to go through. If the voters don't want it, it shouldn't go through. I mean, the
Even
people
if it
have
means-
spoken.
Yeah, well, even if it means interrupting highway funding, transportation funding, north-south freeway funding, that sort of thing?
I mean, north-south freeway, how long has that been going? I mean, since I was a kid, north-south freeway's been going. I have no confidence that they're going to get any of that done anyway. So it's always a tit for tat. This is going to be affected. That's going to be affected. Yeah, it could be. But then you figure out how to do it, because they haven't figured out how to do north-south freeway. I mean, seriously, it's ridiculous. How many years? You know, I went over to Idaho. They built that new bridge there by Cabela's. I think it took mm-hmm. them 30 days to do it. It felt like it just went right up the bridge across the freeway. And I'm thinking, like, you know, we need to get these guys to build the north-south freeway. That'd be great. But I know it's an issue of funding.
So I've also been asking folks about the death penalty repeal went again before the legislature. How do you feel about the death penalty?
I think it's the right thing. I'm for the death penalty. I think if you take someone's life and a jury finds you guilty, then I think death is right.
How would you describe your political philosophy?
I think there's a role for government. I think all these agencies are there to enforce the rules and the laws that are created by the legislators, whether it's a cop or it's Department of Revenue, Department of Finance. That's their job. What I don't like is the individual that works for those agencies that takes it to a whole other level, you know, where they think they are the agency. They think they're the state and they're the ones going to come after you. I think there are a lot of those people within the state agency that shouldn't be working for the state, because I think the state agency should be these agencies, the government should be helping their constituents, helping the people, uplifting them, and not always condemning them, not always taking them on. I think they need to help guide and uplift. And I just don't see that. I just don't see that.
So you're in kind of an unusual situation. You're running for the seat that Matt Shea had, but you're now also running against an incumbent who switched from one seat to the next. How do you challenge an incumbent like that?
Well, Bob McCaslin basically uses his father's name to win every time. I don't think Bob has that. You ever see the movie What About Bob?
You know, I have not. No.
Well, what about Bob? What's Bob doing? I don't think Bob's done anything. I mean, he's a nice guy. There's no doubt he's nice, but we need somebody that's going to go do something. And I think he has just been using his dad's name. His dad was a senator. His dad passed away in, what, 2010? And he's got the same name. I think he even used the same signs as Bob, as his dad. I mean, you know, so what is Bob going to do? My biggest challenge is to the name recognition. So when someone looks at the ballot, they're going to go, okay, Mike Conrad, J.Y. Head, Bob McCann. Oh, I know Bob. You know, a lot of people vote that way. So that could happen, but I just got to get my name out there. I there's nothing else I can do because he can use his name. It's been around forever. He can use it. It's his dad's name that he's using.
So, Mike, those are my questions. Is there anything I didn't ask you about you wanted to talk about while we're here?
Not really. I mean, I appreciate your time. I'm just excited about what I'm doing. I think that I literally can come in and create some new energy, create some coalitions to update antiquated laws, I think, and we can create some good laws. And obviously, we're the minority. There, we're going to have to see how it goes with the Democrats. But I think that I can reach across the aisle. You know, I'm married to a Democrat. My wife's a Democrat. And so I wake up to the opposition every day. And and my kids are right down the middle. So I kind of understand both sides. I see it. I hear it every day. So